Okay. I'll answer all the questions I've got here, and then if there's any time left, I'll throw it open some more. The first question is, what is the orb you mentioned when you received an orb on your throne? Well, okay. So I will show you a picture of it, which will be the best way of actually doing it. And I can actually do that by doing that. That's our queen. She has a scepter, which is a symbol of rule. She has a crown. She has royal robes and a mantle. And in her left hand, she has an orb. So it's like a round type of thing with a cross on top of it. Literally, it represents the ability to make legislation and to rule. So that's what an orb is. So when God gave me an orb, he was showing me, you can now rule from a higher realm and you can make legislation rather than just using things that I've already told you. Now I'm authorizing you to make laws and make legislation. Okay, so that's that one. That one's fairly simple to answer. Let's cut to this. Okay. And along with that, someone actually asked about laws, in fact. Have you an example of a law that you've declared for your throne? Yeah, I've got lots of them, and I've got one here I can read out. At the beginning of the year, God spoke to me about making legislation and using legislation in a different way. And so I went and asked what legislation I am supposed to make. I don't make assumptions. So I went to Wisdom and I said, Wisdom, can you help me understand what legislation? So Wisdom took me to the court of the Councils of the Fathers, and they basically said you can make legislation for the Joshua generation. And the first thing they said, you need to help people become free. So I went to the Court of Kings, and then I made this law. And here's the law. It says, I hereby authorize the law of religious freedom. This law approves the right of the Joshua generation to set God's people free. You are authorized to bring freedom to the oppressed, to release light into the shrouded darkness of the old order. You're authorized to administer Emmaus Road-like encounters to those whose minds have been veiled by the coverings of men. You're authorized to call for and administrate justice for God's people. In love, you're empowered to challenge the old wineskins and their associated mindsets. You are to call the Joshua generation to action, to call into the valley of decision and release heaven's sound and light. You have been assigned the ordinances of the angelic host to engage visitations, dreams, and visions. The old order mountains can be shaken with the winds of change. Use this legislation wisely and with precision, and many will be set free to receive their inheritance. So that's an example of something. Now, how did I make that? I just wrote it out. As I was in heaven, I was sat down in the Court of Kings. There's an empty scroll in front of me, and literally that comes to be written on the scroll, and then I journal it, and then I then write it out. So I didn't sit down and think, what sort of law should I make and what should be in it? And therefore I'm trying to figure it out, because I no longer need to figure it out. So now I don't work things out, I outwork things. And that's a totally different way. It just flows. So if you're in a place, let it flow. So that's an example of that. Another bit on here says, an example of a enforcing restraining order in a court. When I was dealing with things, generally I don't use restraining orders because I want to just deal with something. A restraining order is a temporary thing you're dealing with while you can deal with it. So if you're dealing with some sort of spiritual issue in your life and you want to have some time to be able to reflect on it, to understand it, sometimes you can put a restraining order in place that gives you that freedom to do it, because sometimes these things try and confuse your mind so that you can't figure out or engage. So sometimes a restraining order works that way. And how you would do it is you would just decree and declare that restraining order by going to the court of accusation, calling the accusers to come and accept the accusations like you would in any other situation, but you are looking to probably find more detail about how you outwork it. So as often, sometimes it's a process, and you just make sure you use that restraining order. So if the enemy tries to come and speak into you, or can you just use the restraining order, says you are forbidden and I will take you back to court for contempt if you do this again. So yeah, but you have any law you have to use, any verdict you get from a court you have to use. It isn't just automatic that they will obey it, just like any restraining order. People can break a restraining order, but they're then in contempt of court. If you don't enforce the contempt of court, they'll carry on. So you have to use the authority you've been given by the court and exercise it on a daily basis. Eventually, you'll find that the enemy will stop, because either he won't want to be incarcerated because of breaking a restraining order, so he backs off. But if you don't know the authority, you won't use the authority, so you must use it correctly. Suggest where you find teaching on stars. There are a number of books that you can find online. Most of them are actually free, which talk about how the gospel message is in the stars. One is by someone called Rollison. I think it's something about redemption in the stars. I mean, I've got a number of them on my computer. I don't really find it that interesting. What I want to do with the stars is bring order to them, and with the sense of that 12 houses of God, which are often used as the Maseroth or the Zodiac, they are representations of the Chancellor's houses, which are actually places in heaven, houses in heaven. It's not the stars themselves. It's actually the authority that stars represent, which is angelic authority, and authority that we should exercise, because we're supposed to shine like stars and breathe light. So in a sense, if you're interested in that, there are a number of things. If you Google Christian approach to stars or something like that, you'll find a number of free books. Some of them are quite old, but actually quite interesting, and you can see, you know, even in the different things that they indicate the story of salvation, really, you know, there. But when I'm talking about the stars, I want to bring order to them and align them to release their times and seasons. Because the stars and the sun and moon and everything else were about times and seasons and governors. And so when we begin to administrate into them, we begin to control the times and seasons, not subject to them. So I'm not subject to fate or my horoscope. I will control the times and seasons by ruling and governing in the heavens. You know, the whole perversion of the whole thing of the stars is to get us under a system of fate. You were born on that day, so your life is determined by the stars. Yes, there are things in the stars and there are angels in the stars that have an influence in our lives, but we are to rule, not to be subject to them. Is that one? Have you ever heard of someone being appointed as a guardian of the earth? Yes, in not necessarily and specifically those terms. The Court of 70 are operating in that role as guardians of the creative realm. They should be made up of people from this generation who are serving the purpose of God in this generation. There are very few who are actually operating there, but more and more people are beginning to accept their maturity in government and will be. So the Court of 70 is often made up of angels and men in white linen and others, because we've not taken our places. But definitely that, you know, I have certain roles as ambassadors to certain things that operate in those courts. So yeah, there's lots of things like that. Let's find another question. Are there any benches of 3, 7, 12 established that you know in Southern California? Well, hopefully after tonight there will be. And as a result of me coming, I went to the Northwest last year to bring the same sort of message of establishing the government of God. And they have many, many, many benches now established. they're doing amazing things up in Seattle and up in those areas, because they just took the whole responsibility and they started to establish cities of refuge. They started to establish benches. They've got benches of 12. They've got regional benches. They've got benches that are operating in cities. They've got one that's operating in an American Air Force base, a fort. I mean, they're seriously doing some stuff. And, you know, all because they just took the responsibility and the revelation and they put it into practice. So, you know, I'm looking for that to be established in San Diego, where I just come from, having them released received a blueprint for a city of refuge. And hopefully those who are gathered here who start to meet together after I've gone will start to seek God together for establishing those benches here. So hopefully we'll see that. It should be great. Okay. Can you please explain more about the four chambers of the heart? What happens or what should we encounter on each of them, and if there is a protocol in each? I'm just teaching this module on the Engaging God manual. I've done the Garden of the Heart, and that will be released soon. When I go back, I'm going to do the dance floor and then go through the bridal chamber, you know, the others. Obviously, the key is there are places of intimacy within us that are places of transformation. Are there protocols? It's more about you engaging there and allowing what happens to happen. You don't go there to determine something. You go there to receive something. So when you go on the dance floor is like a checkerboard of black and white, and his DNA comes around you, and it surrounds you with light and color, and it begins to transform your DNA, so you take on the 9 strands of God's DNA, so you end up with 12 strands of DNA, which is the fullness of government, which are represented on the 12 stones on the breastplate of the high priest, whereas Satan only had 9 stones on his body, which represented the fire stones, which was the revelation of the 3 aspects of Father, Son, and Spirit, 9, which are being released. So when you dance into darkness, you can actually bring out of darkness revelation into the light. So it's a constant opportunity of going into the mysteries of darkness and bringing them into the light. Not darkness to be feared, but darkness to be finding the things hidden for us. So really, I do it when I take communion. I go and stand on the dance floor with communion and see the DNA of God come around me, as is there are in some of those declarations. The soaking room, it's about coming to that place of peace and allowing the frequencies of heaven to, some of them are musical frequencies, some of them are oils and perfumes, and they carry an essential living oil type frequency thing, but it's heavenly, to bring us back into alignment with heaven. And that will mean bringing our body back into its right frequency, each organ back into its right frequency. There's a health aspect to that. There'll be a sense of preparation for us, which will be emotional and physical, that will bring us back into sonship. So again, you just go there and you just allow what happens to happen. And then, you know, the last one, you have the bridal chamber. I think that's an intimate thing that you need to keep with yourself and God. It's a consummation of relationship based on having gone through the process and having produced a ketubah and having engaged the dark cloud and going in to engage the person of God. So I don't think you can just waltz into the bridal chamber and just do what you want. You have to go through the process. So there may not be a protocol, but there's certainly a process on that one. Okay. How do you teach children, youth, to enter into the realm of the spirit? Do they need a foundation? What foundation? How to build that foundation? Since we need to prepare the Jesus generation, absolutely. We've found that those that are children, or those that have no basic knowledge or understanding at all, encounter this stuff much easier than those who carry religious baggage. Those who come through the religious system, you have to get rid of the mindsets that say you can't do it, and all the hindrances and restrictions. We take children basically just by engaging them. A friend of mine who works in a school, and she works as a school nurse, there was a little lad who basically had behavioral issues, and their parents were really at the end of their tether, so they asked, is there anything you can do? So she said, well, yes, but you must give me free rein to do things, because I would need to introduce them to the light who can help them. So she sort of tried to keep it fairly neutral, but she said, I'm a Christian. So she got together with a little boy. He was playing with some toys and stuff. So she said, look, I'm just going to invite you to come and meet Jesus. And he carried on playing with his toys, and she just led him into an encounter where she was basically just saying, here, Jesus is here. He's taking you through this doorway. He wants to give you something. And the little boy never stopped playing, and yet testified to having gone to the garden, having met Jesus, having been in the river of life. I mean, he gave this amazing testimony. And she didn't give him imagery to follow. She just opened the door for him to meet Jesus. His behavior changed. Wow. Having met Jesus. Take things. Children operate with childlike faith. You don't have to complicate it. You just introduce them very normally and very naturally to the experiences, and you'll find that they will race into it. Foundationally, all you need to do is to encourage them to embrace who they are, who God made them to be. So it's all about destiny and identity. So they don't get into the works and all the other stuff. So it's about restoring that and helping Jesus to engage them, and the Father to engage them, bring them into a sonship. So you can do that just simply doing the same exercises you would do. You'll find that they enter in. We've done this with new believers. People, we run a rehabilitation unit for people with addictions. We have a day center that works with disadvantaged people. We have 15 to 20 people who are with us on most Sundays who are in our rehabilitation or move on houses. And, you know, they were sitting listening to me, and sometimes most times we do activations, and, you know, that, you know, they come in sort of like 100 sessions behind. So we actually thought, well, no, what we need to do is we need to do something simple for them. So we've developed something called Fresh Start, and it's a Fresh Start course of engaging God from a simple perspective of in salvation being an experience and everything else being an experiential encounter. And so every little foundational thing actually uses an encounter. And we had one guy in doing the encounter. He came up afterwards when we come back and we then worship together afterwards. He came and said, oh, can I give a testimony? He said, when we did the exercise, which was basically just, hey, there's a door open that you can step into the presence of God and you can meet with Jesus, and he's waiting for you. So they stepped in. Jesus said, I want to give you something. So he gave him a stone, and he put it in his hand, and he said, turn the stone over. He turned the stone over, and it said fear. Fear was the biggest problem he faced in his life. So Jesus said, give me that stone. And he said, as I gave him the stone in this picture, in this vision, all the fear just lifted off me. And he said, I would never be able to stand here in front of you and tell you this if that fear hadn't have gone. Well, that guy had never, ever experienced anything like that before. And all it is just make it simple. So, you know, our Fresh Start thing would be really suitable for children. It is just basically something simple, and you just simply engage. You don't try and force it. You try and make it, but you just open the avenue, and you'll find that God will do those sort of things. I would try encourage you to make salvation an experience for someone, not praying a prayer. Someone prays a prayer or put their hands up at a meeting. You never know what they've experienced. If you encounter something like, okay, the prodigal son story, if you like, here's the father. I want you to close your eyes. I want you to picture a father standing in front of you. He's smiling and he's got his arms open. but you come to him and I want you to think of all the terrible things that you've ever done in your life, the worst things that you're most ashamed of that no one else knows, everything, and come, hold it in your hands and come before him. He wants to embrace you, but you can't when you're carrying all this stuff. So just lay it at his feet and let him embrace you. He will then put a ring on your finger. He will give you new clothes. You can just lead someone in an encounter like that. I guarantee they will remember it and they won't doubt. When someone just prays a prayer, it's like, whoa, did anything happen? Did anything not happen? Even when we see people baptized in the Spirit, we don't just lay hands on people and just pray, you know, baptize them in the Holy Spirit. We encourage them to see Jesus standing there and Jesus pouring the Spirit onto them. And sometimes we encourage them to drink living water. Make everything experiential, because then people will have an actual encounter that then they can go back to. They have something they can reuse. It becomes a testimony, which actually is foundational to their lives. I think everything in the Christian life should be by experience and encounter, not just words. But we have to change how we do things significantly if we're going to change these type of things. So I think that answers that one. How cities of refuge work, or a house of refuge. I'm going to do the whole session on that tonight. So probably I won't answer that now. You'll get hopefully the answer to that later. Are there any living things in other planets in the universe or in other universes beside the Earth? Okay. My personal belief is no. What I do believe, there are other dimensions that have other created beings. And most of what people see as aliens are beings from other dimensions. If you actually think about it, every angel or fallen angel is an alien. It doesn't come from this realm. It comes from another dimension. So those who've been abducted by the greys, you know, those sort of little funny looking things, I honestly believe that those abductions can be real. I'm not saying all of them necessarily are, but I do believe they can be real. The enemy's plan right throughout history has been to pollute the seed. He wants to spoil the seed. He tried to do that with Jesus, stopping Jesus being born by polluting the seed through the watcher angels who fell, and then you had the Nephilim and you had all those things. He tried to do that obviously with Adam and Eve, producing Satan, serpent seed and seed of Cain. So there's always been a sense where there's been DNA and seed has been a key area where there's warfare around, and the enemy tries to obviously mess up our DNA to stop us becoming like Jesus. So I believe that there are other dimensional beings that incur into this realm because certain gates have been opened in the past that have invited them through. And the purpose of that is to try and use our DNA to manipulate. And there's whole movements out there, transhuman movement and all that stuff, using genetic manipulation to try and create better humans and that stuff. I don't personally believe, and I have no experience of, and I've asked God and I've got no answer that there are, that there are other beings on other planets, because that was our purpose. Our purpose would have been to fill the earth, multiply, be fruitful, and then that would have gone out into the rest of our solar system, into the rest of the galaxies. So we're supposed to be those that bring population to the rest of the universe. Well, we haven't done it yet. Now, I know there's a lot of stuff out there about that, and there's a lot of stuff. Most of it is just a mishmash of ancient theology. You have stuff like von Daniken years ago about ancient aliens. You have stuff recently which has come up through Jason Westerfield and stuff, which is, to be honest, there's truth in that, yes, beings came to this planet, the Watcher Angels, before the flood, and yes, they genetically manipulated women to create Nephilim spirits, and they were on the earth, and they polluted the earth to such a degree that Noah was the only one righteous in his generational line left, and so God brought the flood. So I do believe that these things are real, but I don't believe they're being interpreted correctly. There was a war in the heavens where Satan and a third of the angels fell, and a lot of things took place. What I don't believe is that some humanoid type beings came from some planetary system and came to manipulate our DNA. Angelic beings did that, fallen ones. It happened, but not the way it's being presented it happened. Because what happened, November last year, when there was this whole big thing about opening a West Gate and inviting these things back through, God was not going to allow that to happen. On the 8th of November last year, God spoke to me while I was engaging with him, and he said, I want you to set angelic guardians upon the West Gate. And he said, once you've guarded the West Gate, I will give you insight into how to open the West Gate, and so that you can go back into that realm and bring things back. And so I did that, simply sent some angels to guard it. And then you had the whole thing that came up, that they tried to open the West Gate to invite back those things that had been genetically modifying people in the past, which was just like, no way. That gate was open twice before. It was opened by Aleister Crowley, who invited Lam, a being or order of beings, to come through. And that's really why you had a lot of things went on. And then L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons did it again in the early, late 40s. And that's when you started having all the UFO things, and you had all the alien greys and all that stuff. So they invited something to come. Now there are people in place in the heavens to stop that stuff. So I don't know if that gives some sort of answer, but anyway. Okay, well, that's all the questions. Anyone else got any other questions you might want to shout out? Yeah, go on.
Do you have people connections in Central Oregon or in Northern California?
Yeah, lots. I've got some really good friends in Corvallis in Oregon, and they're reaching out as a bench there to others. I've got some really good connections in Seattle, in Federal Way, in Yakima, around that whole area. They are pursuing these things, really looking to establish government there. They're legislating. They're doing really great things up there. Quite a lot of people connected. A lot of people in the Engage in God program who are there. I run mentoring groups up there for people on a regular basis. So, yeah. Yep.
How would we find or connect with those people? Is there any way to do that easily?
The best way is for you to contact me and give me your email address or contact details, and I'll pass it on. Obviously, for data protection issues and that stuff, we just can't give out people's details unless they give us permission. So the best thing is we can say, look, these guys would like to connect. Will you connect with them? And that's what we generally do to try and connect people up through the time zones and different areas.
I have another question.
Yeah.
I really like the way you're doing the legislation teachings. It's really helped a lot, being able to study and then listen. Are you opening up the legislative groups? Are they going to be open again? Or what do you foresee with the legislation?
They are still open.
Okay.
I closed them for a while, then reopened them. The problem, obviously, is we're on sort of session 8. And so for anyone then to engage with what we're doing now, they really need to go through the previous 7 sessions. But people can.
And, do you have any vision for, do you know where it's going?
My desire really is just to equip people. So I'm just teaching people how to make legislation, use legislation, get their mountain thrones, do all the things that we do in a legislative pathway. The Engaging God program, up to this point, has all been about developing the relationship pathway so that we're in that place of responsibility. So I started the legislative groups because there were obviously a number of people who were chomping at the bit to get going with that. So I thought, okay. And again, I only really thought I was going to do that with a few people. And then, you know, it's about 190 odd people who wanted to do it. So I've got 11 legislative groups operating from minus 12 time zone in New Zealand and Australia, right up to the Pacific zone. There's a South Pacific time zone and a North Pacific time zone, and then ones through Central and East and Mid, and Canada and Germany and UK. So I'm just looking to help, really. Obviously, my desire is to see benches three and cities of refuge established. So the legislation is really trying to encourage people to get their blueprints and mandates from heaven, so they can then use those blueprints where they are to establish things on the earth, and then give all the support I can in encouraging them how to do that. Really, so yeah.
You're doing it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions? Yep.
Two questions. If you have any insight as to what crop circles are about, and how do you expand and contract
crop circles, I really don't bother myself with a lot of that sort of stuff. You know, there's a lot of conspiracy stuff out there and chemtrails and all that sort of stuff. I'm not saying it is or isn't true. You know, can crop circles be incursions of from another dimension? Yeah, they could be. They could be part of abductions and that type of stuff. Because I'm not really interested and no one would even dare abduct me, then I sort of don't really sort of bother looking into too much like that. The best thing to do would be go back and ask God for yourself. What was the other question?
Expanding
and contracting time. Well, what I do is I frame my day to enable me to do everything that I have a mandate to do. So I have the expectation that I will be able to do that. So if what's happened with me, let's say 3 years ago, before I was connecting up with people all over the world, I was what I would have called busy. You know, I didn't have any spare time. I was doing things, preparing things, teaching things, you know, preparing messages, ministering to people, doing various things, you know, establishing our Bench of Three and all those type of things. When I started to accept God's call to do the things I'm doing now, obviously, if you look at my diary, I would have thought, this isn't possible. So I began to start to frame my life and call into being the ability to be able to do everything that I would have taken hours to do before that I can do now in a much shorter period of time. Now, there's two schools of thought. Am I enabling, because I'm supernaturally empowered, to do things more efficiently and effectively so I can do things in 10 minutes that used to take me an hour? That's one school of thought. Or actually, am I expanding an hour to equal 5 hours? So what I would do in 5 hours, I can now do in one, because actually, I'm authoritatively taking responsibility of time. I wouldn't notice any difference, because time is relative. When you go into heaven, time is different from what it is on the earth. But you don't know any different, you just live it, and then you come back into this time, and you actually, it's like, oh, I've been away for an hour, it's felt like a week. Well, it could have been a week, but you've only lived an hour. So things are relative to your experience. So you wouldn't know that 1 hour was actually 5 hours. But actually, if you start to rule and frame your day, then you have that expectation. When it comes to, you know, the testimony of being able to fly an hour 40-minute journey to make it a 25-minute journey, I send angels out to create an envelope in front of the plane that meant it was able to go through time. Now, how did I do that? I just said, angels, go in front of this plane and create an envelope that's going to enable me to get there on time. That's all I said. It's not complicated. A lot of this stuff, we try and complicate it. You know, when it comes to doing things, when God says to me, like, send out a blue light, which is going to call people, I'm like, okay, what do? I say, I send out a blue light. And that's it. And, you know, I actually felt a blue light go out, and I felt from the crown that I wear in heaven, and I had a blue stone and light went out. But all I said was, send a blue light, you know. I sent some angels to go with some blue scrolls to go with it. But that was it. I mean, then, you know, the next week, a friend of mine, who's a local vicar in our area, I was in a meeting with him afterwards, he said, do you know anything about blue lights? So I smiled and said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, ever since last week, I've had these blue lights dancing around me. And actually, I've had lots of testimonies of people saying that blue lights have come into their room. Yeah, Edgar said the same. It's like, you know, I didn't need to know whether that happened or not. I knew something. I just believe. I mean, I did. God said, I did. I believe. It's not my responsibility to work it out. I don't need to know. But God blessed me with a little kiss just to say, hey, this does work. You know, just keep doing it. So I didn't try and figure out, okay, what frequency of blue light do I need to sound? Do I need this wavelength? Do I need that wavelength? I might have done that in the past. But now it's just like, God says it, I do it. And actually, that's how heaven responds. It responds to our authority and our voice. So we say, we do, it happens. Now, what happens as a result of that isn't our responsibility. It's God's. I don't know what happens to the people who respond to that blue light. Some of them I know because they've said, and I'm engaging with them. Other things, God has a purpose and a plan. He knows what he's doing. I just trust, you know. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about your experience with the blueprints? You talk a little bit about it. So, for example, like whatever your destiny is, and you're stepping into your scroll for the day and what God has for you. And then our spirits are supposed to draw towards our destiny, but then you're talking about whatever the blueprint of what he's called us to do, how do we engage in that, and what court do we need to go to in order for that to manifest?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Our scroll of destiny is the things that God has prepared for us to do from before the foundation of the world. It exists, and it's at the core of our being, but you don't get to see the whole thing. Again, if you got to see it, you would try and figure out how you could do it. Because that's how we function. So what God does, he reveals it to you on a daily basis. So when you go before the Ark of the Presence of God, what we did last night, I go to resonate with his will. I ask him to unveil and write on my heart the day's part of the scroll. So the scroll that I have gets written onto my heart for the day, and my heart then is desires of the heart are drawn towards it, and I do it. And I outwork it and let my spirit lead me into a fulfilling it. That's sort of the aspect of my scroll. A blueprint is something different. A blueprint is an architect's drawing of something God wants us to establish. So you have a blueprint for an ecclesia, or a blueprint for a city of refuge, or embassy of heaven. That blueprint shows you what it is you're supposed to build. Now, you can have an architect's diagram for a hotel. It could be for a ship. It could be for a house. It could be for a shopping mall. It could be for a school or university. Every blueprint has a different outworking of what it's supposed to be. Every ecclesia is supposed to be different, depending on what God's purpose is for it. A blueprint will have with it seven spheres of government, or mountains of authority contained within it. And each one of those mountains will have seven, and each one of those. So there's an infinitely increasing, because there's no end to the increase of his government. Now, you don't try and form, you know, the 49th mountain to start with. You form the government around the blueprint. Because what happens when you receive that blueprint? You get a mandate from God. The mandate says, you have the mandate to establish a city of refuge, let's say. That gives you your authority. You take that mandate, go to the courts. You know, I often take that to the Chancellor's Court, because they give a lot of judicial authority. Sometimes you could go to the Court of Kings, depending on where you felt led to go. Take the mandate that says, I have the authority to establish this. Then I say, I want to receive my blueprint that then shows me what it is I'm supposed to establish. Not go away and think, oh, I can establish a city of refuge, I'm going to figure it all out. So the blueprint, some people will get a blueprint, will look like a diagram. Some people get a blueprint, which is a list of instructions, if you like. So, and I've received both in my life. Now, what I found in my situation, where I was transitioning something from old to new, God had spoken aspects of that blueprint to us as an ecclesia over 20 years. So when I then had the understanding of, hey, what does this blueprint look like? I got the picture, which actually brought together all the aspects that I'd already had revelation of and others had, plus these are our seven mountains and this is how it's organized. And this is how it functions according to four faces of God and the order of Melchizedek. Now that was revealed to me in 2005 before I had any clue of any of this stuff. But I've been on a journey of discovering what it meant ever since. So the blueprint, that then gives you the authority and it gives you the guidance on which to build. And then when you start to call people to become involved, often one person receives the blueprint. Now, if you're in the fortunate situation where you're a group of people and you're seeking God for what the blueprint is, which you can do here, it's like you don't have necessarily one person. It can come through many people. And then you want the government of God, which is the bench of three established for that. And then you call for the angel of the house who connects the bench of three with the bench of seven. And eventually you'll find your seven mountains will each have three people on it as a bench. But the blueprint determines what it is. But it's people who determine the details of the blueprint. We have a blueprint. We are a bench of three with our ecclesia. We have seven mountains. As that's released, the sound and the frequency of those mountains begin to call people. We knew what the words were for those seven mountains: good news, freedom, health, harmony, blessing, media, enterprise. I had no idea what those things meant, and I was certainly not going to try and think about it until people went to that mountain and got their blueprint within the blueprint for that mountain, because every mountain has its own blueprint. They then determined what it was. Everything is about releasing people to discover for God, from God themselves, what that is. If I'd gone to all those mountains, they would have been very different from what they are, because I would have brought only my perspective, and I wasn't allowed to. God told me not to. So as frustration as it was, I had to wait from 2010 and then 2011, when I began to show the blueprint, and particularly the mountain aspect of it, to 2015, until we had them all invested and on their mountains. Now they're all functioning. It's amazing. I mean, it's just great. They're making their own declarations, they're making their own laws. Our Council of 12 is made up of our seven mountains, the angel of the house, and the other ministries that we have, because we're obviously already established. We have ministries. So we have a ministry into the community, Freedom Community Alliance, which is a ministry to the poor and to help people who are disadvantaged with addictions. We have the Freedom Apostolic Resources Mountain, which actually is about me, what I'm doing and what we're doing in releasing resources to people, trying to mentor, help people, all those. So we have sort of 12. Now, we have two yet, which we don't know what they are. So we're everything grows. Our bench of seven, they function together to, they're responsible for the environment of the ecclesia. And they carry the heart to outwork our blueprints, vision statements, our values. So our vision is helping people to find and fulfill their destiny, helping people to be free, to know God, to see, to be, to do, to go. Also, helping people to live in and out the manifest presence of God. So to be a gateway of heaven on the earth. So those are, they're responsible for doing whatever they, to do that. So if they in a sense organize our meetings, they organize everything that we do. If they want me to speak, they'll ask me to speak. If they want someone else to speak, they'll ask someone else. I don't go and determine, I want to speak this week. Now, generally, they're very happy for me to speak, but then they came to me and said, what you're teaching now is no good for the people who are coming in new or the people who are just getting saved. What are we going to do? I said, well, go and ask God. I'm really easy. I can go and speak to nobody. I'll go and speak to a camera if no one wants to listen, because it doesn't really matter. So what they did, they went and got a mandate from God. God said, we're going to have two teachings on a Sunday. We'll start. You can go to the other room. Anyone who wants to go and hear the stuff you're doing, they'll go with you. We're going to actually introduce some basic foundational experiential teaching to help people who are at a different level. And then we'll do that and expand that. We may need three, we need four, we need five different teaching things as we grow. But they got the mandate and they established that. I wasn't going to say, no, you can't do that because you're taking me out of my work. It's just like, because it's their responsibility. I come under their responsibility in the church. I'm a member of the church. I'm blessed by them. They're releasing me to fulfill my destiny in the same way that as a bench of three, I've released them to fulfill theirs. I just benefit from their fulfilling it. Mm-hmm. You know? So actually, when I got most of the vision and blueprint, because I was that's my gift, and therefore, when we formed a bench of three, I had to totally submit it, because it's God's blueprint. It's not mine. It's God's. So we serve God's blueprint. So I am totally mutually submitted to the other two of the bench. I don't own it. I serve it, and I serve God in it. And that's how we function. So, you know, it's absolutely key to get a blueprint if you're going to establish something on the earth as it is in heaven. But when you've got it, it gives you all the guidance. I mean, some of the other places that I've helped to do this, there's one group up in Maryland who started from scratch. I mean, bunch of teenagers, and the oldest is 26. And they've basically came out of university together and university ministry. He was one of the first person I ever mentored. It's never been public because it was always a private mentoring thing, but I meet with him online every couple of weeks. It used to be every week until I got different things in place. But, you know, I saw immediately on him the call to establish a city of refuge, you know, an embassy on earth. I mean, I wasn't going to tell him that. You know, about 12 months later, he said, oh, God's called me to do this. I think, great, awesome. Yeah, I totally affirm that. How are you going to do it? Oh, no idea. I said, well, let's go and ask God then. So we went and engaged heaven. God showed him, hey, I'm going to call my friends and we're just going to get together and we're going to seek heaven together. And that's what they did. They have the most amazing blueprint and vision value statements. It's amazing. I wish I could have done something like that. I mean, it's great. But they have their bench of three, they have their bench of seven, they have the angel of the house, they're starting ministries. You know, it's like, but they did it a new way. And they've worked through the relational issues, they've made sure their family, they've discussed things openly and honestly and transparently, they've created a culture of honor. You know, and the eldest is only 26. You know, youngest is in their teens. So, and you know, nothing's impossible when you're willing to embrace what God shows you to do. All right. Okay, let's leave it there. We'll break for lunch, or tea, dinner, or whatever we call it over here.